Hello, and thank you so much for listening to the Talking Information Center. My name is Vicki, and today is Friday, June 5th, and I'll be reading the Plymouth Independent. Let's get started. Our first article today is in the Culture section of the Plymouth Independent, and it's called Grace Trail Inspires Introspection. There is a picture of a woman named Ann Barry Jawles. Conceived the idea of Grace Trail in 2000, an idea now used in a dozen places around the country. One man recounts how the five questions along the trail prompted him to reassess his life. During the darkest days of his life, Chris Carrazas, 41, of Kingston, found daylight while walking along the Grace Trail in Plymouth. Grace Trail is a section of the rail trail, variously known as the Seaside Trail, the Plymouth Seaside Grace Trail, and the North Plymouth Rail Trail that runs from downtown north for about a mile and a half. The Grace Trail portion, about a half mile long, begins at Nelson Waterfront Park. Along Grace Trail are five granite boulders, each inscribed with a question. What am I grateful for? What do I need to release? What do I need to accept? What is my next challenge? And what can I embrace as possible? Chris Carrazas was lucky to be alive when the Grace Trail found him. After being diagnosed in his late 30s with autism, Carrazas' life took a very dark turn. The diagnosis, hard enough to accept, only complicated an already fraught and failing marriage. After he tried to take his own life, his younger sister Michelle drove from Kingston to Maryland to bring her brother back to Massachusetts. Several psychiatric hospitalizations followed. Once safely home but still struggling, Michelle said one day, "Let's go out for a while. There's something I want you to see." What she wanted him to see was Grace Trail. "These rocks can probably help you," she said. "But at first I just ignored them," says Carrazas. "It seemed like hippie stuff." The brainchild of Ann Marie Jawles, which is pronounced Jawles, 72, of North Plymouth, the seeds of the idea would become Grace Trail formed in 2000. "I was sitting in my kitchen, struggling, and in a state of despair," Jawles tells me as we sit in the shade at a picnic table in Nelson Park on a beautiful day in late May. Adorned in a baseball cap with the words "Plymouth, Massachusetts, 1620" embroidered on it, Jawles is a Plymouth enthusiast with a great love of the town she's called home for 14 years. "I'd recently lost both of my parents, had two teenagers, and was working as an occupational therapist on the South Shore, and had worked at the Fernald State School in Waltham," she tells me. Fernald was a state institution for the disabled that was notorious for its human rights abuses, and Jawles witnessed some of the horrors firsthand. "I don't usually talk like this," she says, "but I need to step into a state of grace. I could see the calm in the eye of the storm, but I couldn't get there." Then seemingly out of nowhere, five words sprang to mind, whose first letters spell the word grace. Gratitude, release, accept, challenge, and embrace. And then came the five simple yet profound questions that would one day be engraved on those granite boulders. Jawles shared the questions with her husband Tom, a pediatrician, and he suggested that he and Anne do grace together. During the summer of 2000, they walked every night and wrestled with the five questions, a process that enhanced their connection. As Jolas shifted careers and became a certified life coach, she found the questions enormously helpful in her practice. In 2012, Jolas's son Rob, a member of the Army National Guard, was deployed to Afghanistan as a combat engineer, which put him on the firing line every day, defusing roadside bombs. Jolas was, understandably, riddled with fear and anxiety. "That year, I stumbled onto a story about the Appalachian Trail," she tells me, "and I wondered, who was walking that trail? It turns out a lot of veterans were walking off their war on the trail, and I thought, where do I walk off my war, my struggles?" When the Jolases moved to Plymouth from Hanover, they began walking the Seaside Trail, a more rudimentary path at the time, and not considered a particularly safe part of town. "I started picking up the biggest rocks I could carry," said Jolas, "and wrote one of the five questions on each with a Sharpie. I thought it would just be for me." But when she would return to the trail, she saw groups of people, including veterans, standing around the rocks and talking about them and the questions they posed. As time went by, more and more people were gathering at the rocks. "It became a destination," Jolas says. When the town embarked on a major upgrade of the Seaside Trail in 2024, in part to make it accessible to bikes and wheelchairs, Jolas approached the town about upgrading what had become known as Grace Trail along with it. David Gould, Plymouth's Director of Environment and Energy, and Nick Faela, Superintendent of Parks and Forestry, walked the trail with the Joleses and became enthusiastic supporters of the idea. "I told them what I envisioned," Jolas says, "and they implemented it. Today, the granite boulders, engraved with the five questions that line the trail, are complemented by smaller rocks Jolas hand decorates with inspirational words. And others have started to leave their own rocks and stones. The boulders, the signage, and the engraving were all donated by local vendors." The five questions are there, but the answers are for each person to find on their own. Says Jolas, "This isn't about telling people what to think. It's about finding your footing wherever you are in life." After their initial visit, Chris Carrazas and his sister often returned with Shadow, Carrazas' German Shepherd, and he started to reflect. "What am I grateful for? I was grateful for my family, to be home, to be in this beautiful setting, and to be in tune with nature." At the boulder that asks, "What do I need to accept?" Carrazas realized he had to accept the past, the diagnosis, and the only way forward was acceptance of the past. "I started going to Grace Trail every day on my own with Shadow," he continues. "The trail helped me keep it together, to hear the sounds of the birds, and being aware of my natural surroundings was therapeutic. Grace Trail puts things in perspective. It's so simple, but so powerful." Today, Carrazas is working, writing, dating, and playing pickleball regularly, and lives near his siblings. And he's grateful for one other thing, meeting Ann Jolas and being able to thank her in person. For Jolas, meeting people such as Chris Carrazas, who have found so much solace and equanimity on Grace Trail, is its own reward. People need a place that helps them rise, and for Chris, Grace Trail was that place, she says. Today, there are a dozen Grace Trails around the United States, in Wisconsin, Texas, Vermont, and Connecticut, and another in Canada, all licensed by or done with the approval of Grace Trail, Inc., which the Jolas has formed to hold the rights to the Grace Trail trademark and related copyright material. She also provides guidance to the communities that want to recreate Grace Trails of their own. The local communities raise the money and implement the project and have considerable latitude within guidelines provided by Jolas. Next to open this coming fall is Grace Trail at the Brockton VA Hospital, where Jolas' son received many services. Jolas' vision is a Grace Trail in each of the 50 states, and she's looking for a foundation or an individual who can help make that happen. It's a full-time job she does without pay, but the rewards are endless. John and I feel a responsibility for the state of the world, she says. Grace Trail was gifted to me, and I want to share that gift. Okay, the next article today is in the government section of the Plymouth Independent, and it's titled, Plan Could Help Fund Busing Costs. The State Senate has adopted a budget measure to help districts with sprawling geography. This article is written by Fred Thies of the Independent staff. The town's $6 million cost to take school kids to and from school each year could be getting a boost from taxpayers statewide next year under a new plan adopted unanimously by the State Senate. Under a budget amendment co-sponsored by State Senator Dylan Fernandez, Democrat of Falmouth, state lawmakers for the first time are considering the long miles Plymouth school buses must travel in the state's largest town by area. The measure, included in the state's massive budget bill, must now win approval from a joint committee assigned to agree on budget language. Every day, 65 Plymouth school buses travel a total more than 4,700 miles, said Christopher Campbell, Plymouth Superintendent of Schools. Managing transportation here is uniquely complex. We navigate a distinct blend of urban infrastructure, urban fringes, and highly rural conditions, Campbell said in an email. These geographic factors make our transportation operations tricky and significantly costlier than most other districts. Annually, Plymouth spends about $6 million a year to transport more than 4,800 students who take yellow buses to school. It's quite an expensive endeavor, Fernandez said. The state does not reimburse Plymouth or other large area towns for their outsized costs of transportation. Under the Senate proposal, a commission formed to review state funding of education would adopt a new formula when figuring out how much each town should receive for transportation that would factor in road mileage and geographic area. It's really important to me that this time around the school bus transportation is included in that formula, Fernandez said. Fernandez also said many rural Massachusetts towns face a similar problem of high costs of transporting students. Massachusetts cities and towns are not reimbursed for regular school transportation costs unless they belong to a regional school district. It is incredibly difficult to have to fund transportation at such a high percentage of our operational budget when we desperately need every single dollar to directly support students in the classroom, Campbell said. The House has not adopted an identical proposal in its budget. The differences between the House and Senate budgets would have to be resolved by a recently appointed conference committee. By law, the final budget for fiscal year 2027, which begins July 1, is supposed to be sent to the governor by July. However, most years the legislature has blown past the deadline, requiring it to pass temporary budgets. The House budget did include a related measure requiring the State Department of Elementary and Secondary Education to maintain a database of school transportation contracts that support school districts could use when negotiating with bus and van operators. Vans for some special education, homeless, and foster students can cost anywhere from $250 to $800 a day, said State Representative Michelle Badger, Democrat of Plymouth. Badger and Plymouth's other state representative, Kathy Lanatra, Democrat of Kingston, haven't introduced their own proposals. The first, H.513, would allow a town's schools to apply for a grant from a special fund if its transportation costs per pupil exceed 125% of the average transportation costs per pupil in the state. The other proposal, H.4011, would set cap the daily price of contracts between private transportation companies and school committees for the transportation of pupils receiving special education and homeless students. End of article. Our next article is in the police and fire section of the Plymouth Independent and is titled Two Men Arrested for Attack on Woman with Mental Illness. Online video led investigators to the altercation, which began outside the Yellow Deli. Written by Andrea Estes of the Independent staff. Two men, two Plymouth men, are facing criminal charges after a video appeared on the Facebook page All Things Plymouth showing them allegedly punching and shoving a woman who is mentally ill and has no home. The alleged attack took place on April 8th, but it wasn't until May 20th when a caller alerted police to the online video. The Plymouth investigators were able to piece together what happened. The video, which was posted anonymously, has since been taken down. The alleged attackers told police they were unaware the woman was disabled, but the officer said any reasonable person could see she was not a threat, according to police records. Joshua Wallace and Matthew Miller, both 20, are scheduled to be arraigned June 2nd on charges of assault and battery on a disabled person and disorderly conduct. Court records did not identify lawyers for either man. The caller told police he recognized the alleged victim, Dominique Pina, because he works for Father Bill's and Mainspring, an organization which works to support people without homes, where she is served weekly. Police, too, could identify her from the video. The Independent is identifying the alleged victim because she was named multiple times online. Pina has had many encounters with the police. The 49-year-old woman has been diagnosed with schizophrenia and has been seen communicating with people who aren't there, records show. She's been charged more than a dozen times since 2020 for minor offenses, such as trespassing, that is, showing up at places she has been banned from. In his report on the alleged assault, Plymouth Police Officer Nicholas Hunt described how the harrowing attack continued even after Pina was on the ground. His report described how the struggle appeared to start in front of the Yellow Deli on North Street with Wallace shoving Pina. She fell on her back and tried to kick Wallace away, he wrote. Wallace then grabbed her by the shoulder and elbowed her in the face with his arm while she was on the ground. He kept punching her, the police report said. Miller then intervened, grabbing Pina's jacket and pushing her down, almost causing her head to hit the concrete, Hunt wrote. The video doesn't capture the entire assault, but it is clear that both parties continued to assault Dominique as she was trying to defend herself, Hunt wrote. Police questioned Pina, but she refused to confirm that this assault happened. She stated that it was not her, Hunt wrote. Wallace called the station to give his side of the story, the police report said. He said he was in fear for his life and unaware Pina was disabled. He told police he heard her yelling and approached her. She struck first, he said, slapping him in the face and scratching him. He responded by grabbing her, taking her to the ground, and assaulting her with his elbow and fist. Miller, his friend, then took hold of her and pushed her, he told police. Hunt told Wallace the video contradicted his account, showing instead how he was in complete control of her mobility, pushing her to the ground and hitting her multiple times. The level of force was unnecessary and excessive, he wrote. Wallace admitted he may have went too hard, the officer wrote. Miller told police Wallace and Pina got into an altercation and began slapping each other. When Pina was on the ground, he said he tried to separate them by pulling her off Wallace. But Hunt wrote, the video showed Miller grabbing Pina and shoving her down, and she nearly struck her head on the pavement. If convicted, they could face up to 3 years in prison and $1,000 fine, or both. Pina was not always homeless, nor was she always mentally ill, according to news accounts and court records. Once a security supervisor at the former Pilgrim Nuclear Power Plant, Pina described her mental decline in an emotional 2022 Patriot Ledger story. About 7 years before the story ran, she said, she started hearing things, which she described as amplified sound, as if you were at a concert. She said she would sometimes find herself walking down the street, talking out loud to herself. You can't control it, she said. It was scary, said Pina, who grew up in Plymouth. I never had a mental illness before. I was fine. I was working and just living life. Unable to continue working at the power plant, she volunteered for the Council on Aging's Meals on Wheels program in Plymouth, the story said. For a time, she lived in a Plymouth Housing Authority apartment in the Cherry Hill development, but was evicted after being accused of tormenting her neighbors and destroying her apartment, according to court records. Neighbors said she roamed the halls late at night, banging on doors, smashing walls, and destroying equipment like a security camera and a light switch plate. She generally gutted her apartment, according to a motion for an injunction the Plymouth Housing Authority filed in 2020. Several tenants filed affidavits saying they were terrified of her. But others in Plymouth remembered her in happier times, describing her in comments posted on Facebook after the assault video appeared as a sweet, kind person. It's heartbreaking when a person who once had so much going for them ends up struggling without the protection they need. Watching that video of the assault brought me to tears, wrote one woman on Facebook, who asked not to be identified. Mental health services often fail people long before tragedies like this happen. The woman wrote in a post that drew more than 200 mostly sympathetic comments. Some questioned why it took so long for the two alleged assailants to be charged. Plymouth and our police department need to step it up and do better at keeping vulnerable people safe, she wrote. The mental health system failed her, and she didn't deserve to be assaulted by these two cowards. Plymouth needs to not fail her, too. Pina has received help from Plymouth's Special Mental Health Court, which serves mentally ill criminal offenders by offering treatment plans and supervision instead of detention, according to court records. She is due for a competency hearing on July 15, court records show. but whatever treatment she received is not enough, an expert on criminal justice and mental health said. Kelly Wallace, an associate professor at Lasalle College, called the story heartbreaking and yet another example of how we are still dealing with the impacts of deinstitutionalization. The community mental health centers set up to help folks like her were closed en masse starting in the 70s, said Wallace. She said as many as 90% have shut down since then. Pina said, she said, appears to be suffering from a mental illness that is not being treated and engaging in concerning but overall nonviolent behaviors. Police, who seemed sympathetic, are trained in crisis intervention, she said. But young people are uninformed about mental health and illness, she said, and misinformation is rampant on social media. Without knowing any better, someone who is having a mental health crisis could come across as intoxicated or potentially threatening, she said. Individuals with mental illnesses are 11 to 13 times more likely to be victims as opposed to perpetrators of violent crime as well. So when you are at the intersection of those identities, your risk of victimization increases exponentially, she added. Our last article today is from the Your View section, Apparent Conflicts Demand Recusals, written by Richard Cerkey. Matt Sheridan is a Plymouth real estate developer who has signed purchase and sales contract for 138 acres in Cedarville that are classified under MGL Chapter 61. Which provides that in return for reduced real estate taxes, the town has a right of first refusal to purchase the land. As a result, the owner has forwarded the PNS to the town to determine whether or not the town will exercise its right of first approval to purchase the land or to assign its right of first refusal to a nonprofit conservation organization. Sheridan is a friend of two select board members, Kevin Canty and David Golden. Canty's and Golden's votes are not required as long as the other three members of the select board, Dick Kintal, Bill Cohen, and Deb Jacinto, are present and vote, since three members of a five-member board constitute a quorum, and a majority vote by those three will be sufficient, under the town charter, to exercise or assign the town's first right of refusal. That's all the time we have for today for the Plymouth Independent. My name is Vicki from the Talking Information Center. Take care, and thanks for listening.